Today, me and Nozzer are going to be taking a look back on this weekend's action. So the weekend of football has concluded. We still have one game to go in this game week, but we'll be taking a look at what's happened so far. So welcome, Noz. How are you today?
Fantastic. Couldn't be better. How are you feeling today, Kyo? You got your second vaccine today?
Yeah.
4G officially installed.
Jeez, wait, actually, let me have a check out here. 5G, by the way. We're still on 4G on the phone, yeah. Unfortunately. Oh, shame. Been a crazy weekend of football again.
Man, it's been so good to have the Premier League back, the fans back. Obviously, we're treated to a fantastic opening weekend, and I think the second week delivered just as well so far.
Yeah.
So we're starting off the weekend's action, the game in Anfield, the half 12 kickoff, Liverpool versus Burnley. A solid 2-0 win. They went about their business.
Yeah, it was a good showing. So Jota and Mane both getting on the score sheet will give Liverpool fans a lot of encouragement because they saw, obviously, Salah perform very well in game week one. It's sort of going to give them that little boost that they have their two clean sheets now. They're like, oh, Van Dijk's back, we're sorted. And the attackers are performing.
I think the main highlight for Liverpool fans from the opening two game weeks has to be the return of Van Dijk. Obviously, having conceded a goal in the opening two fixtures against weaker level opposition, we have to say, but they just look extremely solid. He is just such a reassuring presence back there, and they're going to be a serious threat this season, a big contender for the league this year.
I think another important thing to look at when we're looking at Liverpool is the amount of shots taken. They took 27 shots against Burnley. Last season they were putting up high enough shot numbers, but they weren't on target. They had 9 on target this time. That's a lot of shots on target for keepers and defenders to be dealing with. And I know Burnley are well suited to deal with it, and they also, their style sort of allows you onto them. But it's still a fairly impressive performance for them to be putting up numbers like that. And of course, two of the forwards getting on the score sheet. Salah did score, but it was offside, unfortunately. Harvey Elliott looked good.
Harvey Elliott looked brilliant on his Premier League debut. He's a promising young lad, and he couldn't ask for any better on his debut, could he?
No.
He looked very, very well.
And what I liked to see was he had a very nice link up with Salah, in that he played Salah through a good few times, and it seems like he just gets him. He understands how Liverpool's wingers are working, is what I was getting by that. And it looks like he could be a very dangerous player if he's moulded correctly.
And if the opening two games are anything to go by, it looks like Sadio Mane is coming back into some semblance of his best sort of form. Last season, there was a big drop-off in performances, and the burden was heavily on Salah to provide the goal for Liverpool. That kind of pressure can't be on their shoulders, not solely on their shoulders anyway. Jota, it will always get you goals, but he's prone to injuries. But if Mane is getting close to his best sort of form, Liverpool are going to be big contenders this year.
Yeah, they'll be very dangerous. What was up after that one, Noz?
The Aston Villa-Newcastle game. One of the goals of the season, this is easy, you can tell for goal of the season, Danny Ings' bicycle kick, fantastic goal. He's certainly hit the ground running at Villa Park.
Oh, yes. I don't think that surprised anybody, though.
No, it most certainly hasn't. And then it was capped off by an El Ghazi penalty.
And that is another thing, is I know El Ghazi's 100% from the spot for Villa. I was surprised things didn't take it.
I was surprised, considering he scored a penalty in game week one. I'm surprised they didn't give it to him, you know, get him on the score sheet again. You want your striker to be exuding confidence, but I suppose with 2 goals in 2 weeks for his new club, I'm sure he's not lacking confidence but if that finishes
at the same time. You do have to respect that they stuck with their own penalty taker when he was on the field. They gave him another one. He hasn't failed for them yet, so there's no reason that they shouldn't trust him.
Right, and I had I expected Villa to kick on from last year. I thought Villa were a very threatening side last year. I think they recruited well after selling Jack Grealish, and I predict them to be knocking on the door for European football this year. After they slipped up in game week one, I think they're back on track in game week two.
Yeah.
I do feel bad for Ollie Watkins though. I thought Ollie Watkins was a very solid addition last year. He scored a lot of goals from last season. His all-round play was very good, and I think he's certainly been hard done by to see himself out of the starting lineup the first 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can work out some way that they can integrate him into the side with Ings. But
the other thing you got to look at is Villa started off, they played nice football week one, they didn't get the result. They played nice football week two, they got the result. And we're still yet to see Watkins or new side and Leon Bailey make an appearance this season. So it shows a bit of strength and depth there, that they've got players behind the ones that are playing. There are players on that pitch that are prone to injuries. Danny Ings is one of them. They have Ollie Watkins behind them. They have Leon Bailey as an option on either wing as well. And players like El Ghazi, he's a very hot and cold player. But if he can keep sort of decent form all season, he might give Bailey a run for his money for that position.
Exactly. And they're back on track anyway. And from the Newcastle perspective, more doom and gloom. That's two losses in two matches now. We all know Steve Bruce is the least popular man on Tyneside. Would you think that even at this early stage of the season, is he under pressure for the sack?
I think because of the fans that he has to deal with, yes. I think any other Premier League club, they're going to be fine with Brucey being there, and like they know he's going to put in, like he will grind out results and get them to where they need to be. But because obviously he has such a strong connection with Sunderland, they don't give a shit. If he's doing bad, they want him out.
His style of play doesn't know favours either.
No, it doesn't. Especially not when you have the attacking talent that Newcastle have got now and the flair that they've got in that attack. You don't want to be seeing players like that playing in Brucey's style.
And to be fair to Bruce now and to Newcastle, Callum Wilson had a golden chance to score and to bring Newcastle back into the game before they got their second. It might have been before Villa even scored, actually. And if Callum Wilson finishes that, it's different story. It's a different game. Yeah. So you never know. It's fine margins in this game. Newcastle needs to start putting some points on the board soon, though.
Another important thing to look at with Steve Bruce is the point tallies he's brought out in Newcastle. I think he's hit 43 and 45 points. I may be wrong there in his two seasons.
It's similar enough anyway.
Which is better than the two seasons Rafa had in charge of Newcastle in the Premier League.
And Rafa was hauled as a hero, as a legend.
And
you know,
if you're, like, you could make the argument of Bruce has been backed more, but Bruce got Joe on him. No, it's not really being backed, is it?
Yeah, no, the less said about Joel, the better. I suppose moving on to our next game, one of Keogh's favourite teams in the Premier League, Crystal Palace hosted newly promoted Brentford.
My boys.
We've already seen our first stalemate, our first 0-0 draw of the season. Disappointingly so for myself and Keogh's bets. What's the change of this game, Keogh?
There wasn't a whole lot going on, to be honest. It wasn't an awful game, but there was chances for both sides. I believe both sides hit the crossbar.
Brentford most certainly did anyway.
Well, I could recall Gallagher hitting the crossbar for Palace. So yeah, both sides did. I feel like either of them could have stole it. Gallagher probably should have stole it. With his hit against the crossbar, he's in a fairly good position. But I've seen top players miss from those positions not too long ago. I was watching PSG play. Marco Verratti blazed one over the bar from pretty much the exact same spot. So you can't put too much onto him, but at the same time, he should have scored. And Brentford's hit against the bar would have been a bit of a wonder goal if that got in. So,
well, I've never met a person in Ireland anyway with as much love for Crystal Palace, as much trust in Patrick Vieira as you. Okay. After his first two games in charge, obviously, 1 point on board, no goal scored. Would you still be as confident that Patrick Vieira is going to succeed at Selhurst Park?
I've said it from the start. It's going to be either absolutely obliterating all expectations and rife into the top of the league, not to win it, but up towards the top half of the league, or it's going to be a relegation. And from these two performances, I haven't seen anything poor enough to make me think that it's the latter. And but I haven't seen anything good enough in that they haven't scored a goal as of yet to be able to say confidently, yeah, they're going to push on up. But when you think about it, we haven't seen Eze play yet this year. He's out injured. Maybe when he comes back, I don't know when that is. If it's long away, they might be in trouble. But if not, I can see Palace still performing well. Maybe not quite to the extent that I originally thought, but I can see them performing well for the season.
I suppose I'm on the other side of the spectrum. I expected Palace to struggle big time this year. I expected Vieira to be one of the first managerial casualties of the season. Everything I've seen so far would lead me to suggest I was right in that opinion. I do fear for Palace. I still have that good feeling that they will get relegated.
But I don't think they've looked bad. I think you can see that they might get relegated, but I don't think they've looked bad. In that, Brentford have actually looked like a very decent team. They played very well against Arsenal. So seeing Palace get a nil-all draw against them might be a better result than you think.
The most certainly, Brentford, since their first two games in the Premier League for the first time in 70-odd years, have been wonderful. They've shown great energy, their pressing game has been fantastic. They brought an awful lot of excitement back to the Premier League. It's always nice seeing a new club get a chance at the top level. And I'm convinced, we said it beforehand when we had chats amongst ourselves, that we thought that Brentford would be okay and we thought they'd be safe. I'm even more convinced now that they will be safe.
Yeah.
I think they have a great togetherness in that group, and they have, it's pretty much the same group that brought them up that are still there now, and I just think they're going to take this opportunity. I think this season, maybe next season, they might struggle. You know, you always have a one-season wonder.
Yeah.
Like Sheffield United 2 years previous. I think Brentford will be okay. I think they'll be comfortably mid-table.
The one thing that does worry me a little bit is they have come out looking very good, but two seasons ago we saw Norwich come out of the blocks looking very, very solid, looking strong. We saw their defensive woes early, but we saw them looking strong in attack and like they were playing nice football, quick build-up. I don't think Brentford will suffer the same fate, but it's just worth mentioning that there have been clubs that have come up looking like that and then either quickly the tactical geniuses of the league, which there are many, spot holes in the game, or the players just simply aren't capable of keeping up the same intensity for the full season. It's a possibility. I don't think it's very likely to happen. I think Brentford, they've shown themselves well so far, and even with poor showings in the first two games, I probably still would back them to stay up.
I suppose we will touch on Norwich here in a minute or two's time. I think Brentford is a lot more defensively sound than Norwich. Norwich's big problem is that every season that Norwich get relegated is their leaky defence. I think they approach games very naively. We'll touch more on that in a minute, but I think Brentford are a lot more defensively sound. And they have some decent attackers. I think they'll be okay. I think they'll be safe. That brings us on to arguably the game of Saturday, the 3 p.m. between Leeds and Everton at Elland Road. First time fans have been in Elland Road in the Premier League in 17 seasons, if I'm correct.
Something crazy like that, yeah.
And they were treated to a thriller, 2-2 draw. What did you make of this game, Keogh?
It was so good. End-to-end stuff. Love to see it. It's exactly what you wanted to see from this game. You saw this game on paper and you saw how Everton played week one, how Leeds play all the time, how Everton sort of like capped out last season. You're thinking, you're going to see goals. We were all expecting to see goals, and we saw goals. So we saw new men at Everton performing well. Demarai Gray got himself a goal. He, by all means, looked like he had completely fucked the chance up. But he squeezed it in.
It was a lovely finish.
It was a very nice finish, and it caught the keeper off guard. But I think he caught the keeper a little bit more off guard than he planned to, because he fucked it up a little bit.
Was a draw a fair reflection in this game?
I think so. I think there were chances to steal it on either side. I think the biggest chance to steal it came from Calvert-Lewin, where Iwobi, fucking absolute god Alex Iwobi, played a beautiful little ball in behind, and Calvert-Lewin got onto it. It's a sort of chance you'd expect a player like Calvert-Lewin to put away, but at the same time, it was just good goalkeeping by Melier.
I think Calvert-Lewin could have had a hat-trick on the day. He had a lot of chances. Ones that I'd be expecting to do better with. One coming in from Iwobi, that cross on the right-hand side. Then he had one on the left-hand side. He was on his left foot that I felt like he should have dinked over Mesley. And I don't know. I thought it was a poor finish in the end. I think you have to give the keeper no chance in that position. I do think a draw was arguably a fair result. I've been really impressed with Everton under Rafa. I think Rafa is a really good fit, as we have talked about before.
He is.
And it's glad to see there hasn't been too many boos. The Everton fans, I thought the Everton fans would be a bit more hostile.
I think the Everton fans...
So far.
I think the Everton fans are... Everton see themselves as a big club. Everton fans see their club as a big club. Everton, they want to be a cult almost. They want to have that cult following. So I think, provided Rafa keeps bringing in performances from the team like he is, keeps showing up in games. Once Everton keeps showing up in games, the Everton fans will not have an issue at all getting behind Rafa. And it's a good thing. It's a very good thing, because with the support of the fans, and if he gets the financial support that he lacked so badly in Newcastle, Rafa Benitez could bring this Everton team to Europe.
I think they'll certainly be strong contenders. They'll be a solid top eight, I'd say. I think they could be pushing for a Europa Conference, maybe Europa League at a push. I think that'd be a fantastic achievement. I don't think they have it quite enough. I think they're a very workmanlike team.
Yeah.
Similar enough to his Newcastle team, but I think that's why he fits so well. Yeah. He has that...
It's like Newcastle. It's pretty much a top half Newcastle. That's what he's managed to get himself here.
But even when you look at the Liverpool team that he had, and he pulled the wonders with... Liverpool, towards the end of his reign, the kind of 08-09 season, where he got them to second place against United, that was a much better team than the Liverpool team that won the Champions League.
Yeah.
But he seems to be that kind of manager that can pull these miracles and make players like Demarai Gray, who was flattered to the sea for so long, like Andros Townsend, who no one in their right mind would sign and left Crystal Palace on a free, and make things work. Like, he seems to bring it out in bang average players.
Say Alex Iwobi.
No, Alex. I've said enough about Alex Iwobi. I don't even want
to
mention.
What a start to the season, man! He got assist week one, week two. He absolutely sticks on a play for Calvert-Lewin, like fucking 8 yards out or some shit. And he bottles a finish.
Yeah, so I do
think Alex Iwobi will be on fire this season. Mm. He's coming for that. He's coming for that fucking golden. What is it? Golden ball for the assists.
Yeah, I think it's
Golden Ball Award.
Yeah, he's coming for you.
The King of Nigeria is coming for you. I just know it.
Well, if Rafa can pull that off, he'll go down as the greatest manager of all time if he can make Alex Iwobi the Golden Ball winner this year.
No, Alex Iwobi will go down as the greatest player of all time if he can make Rafa Benitez make everyone look like a good team.
That's fair enough. And just before we move on to the next game, Leeds. After getting battered by United on the open day of the season, I think... They showed a lot of resilience to come back into it, a lot of character, and I've seen a few people say on TalkSport mainly, which a lot of people don't trust them as a credible source, but a lot of people saying that Leeds get relegated with the way BS play. I think that's nonsense. No. I think it'll be very safe, it'll be very entertaining.
They came from behind twice. It showed a lot of character. I think definitely you could see the players were elevated by the fans.
Yeah,
and that is one thing that we saw Leeds play great last season.
Mm-hmm.
We did not get to see Leeds play with a packed out Elland Road, and that is when Leeds will always perform at their best. That's when any team will perform at their best. But such a free flowing team that makes so many chances, I feel like this season we could see Leeds hit 5+ goals in a lot of games.
I'm very glad that you mentioned the fact that they played better with the home crowd there and home fans, because last season we saw the momentum shift with no fans there. And it was the highest amount of away wins in a Premier League season last year. The pendulum was definitely shifted back. The opening weekend, there was only 2 away wins. If I'm saying correctly, just let me double check that. There was, 2 away wins.
And every game was...
No, 3 away wins, sorry. That's it. I was missing something. I missed the West Ham game there. 3 away wins last week out of the 10 games.
Yeah.
And this week, there's only 2.
Yeah,
the pendulum has shifted back to momentum. The home crowd makes a difference. Home advantage is a real thing again, and I agree with you 100%. I think if that was a game behind closed doors, I think everyone win that game.
Yes, definitely.
Fans make such a difference, and they certainly spurred Leeds on to get that equaliser.
Without a doubt.
Now we move on to the champions, Manchester City. They were playing at home in the empty had. Embarrassing scenes that they could not fit out their stadium. No, how these lads call themselves a big club. I'm not even going to try hide my disgust.
Imagine how embarrassing for Jack Grealish.
Yeah, your home debut.
No one cares.
Champions of England.
He scores, no one cares.
Yeah, you can't sit out your stadium. Oh my God, it's embarrassing.
Yeah, I almost mentioned Jack Grealish. Does not make him a good signing that he scored that goal. He's still not worth 100 million, in my opinion.
Well, considering he knew absolutely nothing about his finish, bounced off him. Look, City had a great game. They always do. It's against Norwich. Norwich are so naive in the way they play.
Yeah.
It's admirable the fact they try to play nice football, but get a grip, lads. You constantly get relegated playing this style of football. You have a leaky defence. Shore it up. I don't understand this.
Yeah. I think something you got to look at with Man City was the way Ferran Torres and Gabriel Jesus played.
Mm.
So they're both named the starting 11. Ferran Torres, sort of, he'd be more well-known as a winger than a central player.
He's clinical.
Jesus the opposite way around, and also nowhere near as clinical.
Mm.
I said from the start of the season, I said during the Euros as well, that if Ferran Torres can play centrally, he can get a lot of goals. I think how Man City played in that game was great, the way they saw it. There wasn't either of them that were clearly fixed to be up front. That Jesus obviously spent a lot of time in that area, but Ferran Torres had his moments where he was coming infield, he was playing very centrally. It was a great thing to see that they're giving him a chance up there as well as Jesus. I think Jesus has had years to prove that he's able to play up front, and he hasn't.
Yeah, I think we can all write off Gabriel Jesus.
I don't think he'd be written off.
No,
he's still
a good squad player.
No, I don't.
He's not good enough to be the leading man at a club at the caliber of Manchester City.
Not good enough to be Man City's leading man, because he gets too many chances to the point where he doesn't mind missing some, which isn't okay for a striker. Whereas if you have Ferran Torres up there, that motherfucker will score 4 or 5 goals against Norwich if he could have.
The thing I love about Ferran Torres is that he has that same thing that I hit about Mason Greenwood, is that he has an eye for goal. He knows where the back of the net is, and he hits it 9 times out of 10.
It's another thing that would put him ahead of Jesus, in that when he gets the ball, he's not thinking, oh, I've got to beat this man and then shoot. He's just got to think, how do I get this ball in the back of the net? It is not, how do I get myself some space and then we'll work that out. The first thought in both, same for Greenwood, first thought in the mind every time is, where's the corner? How do I get the ball there? If he needs to move, he'll move. If he needs a little dribble, he'll do that. If he needs to play it off, he'll play it off. But first thought in his mind every time is, can I get this into the corner?
I suppose this is probably the hardest one we've had to talk about all day, because there's not too much to say on the game itself, because I think it's the most predictable outcome of the whole weekend.
It may as well have just been like fucking training match. Like,
I was in work on the Saturday, so I was privy to all the odds beforehand. They were 1-14 at one stage, like, to beat Norwich, and they were 1-0 up in the first 2-3 minutes. Like, so look, Pep Guardiola could twat Norwich 5-0 in his sleep.
Man City with his third team.
Yeah, with his third. Like, this is no surprise. Norwich are going to get relegated if they don't show up this defense.
There's no if. Norwich are going to get relegated, full stop.
Yes.
I don't give it. They signed Virgil van Dijk. I don't give a shit. Norwich are getting relegated. They have no midfield. Todd Cantwell's the only player in that midfield that I would say is reasonable. Their biggest attacking threat is gone when Dia moved.
Mm.
The only decent defender they have is Max Aarons, and he should be gone. I don't know why he's still at the club.
I don't understand why Max Aarons should have left 2 years ago. When he got relegated, he should have left. It's, and now this season, they're back in Premier League. He should leave. I don't understand this. I'd hate it. I feel so sorry for any Norwich fan. I doubt any of you are listening. But honestly,
we will apologise to you for telling you you're getting relegated, but you need to be told.
It would sicken me to be such a yo-yo club and show no ambition. After the sale of Buendia, where has the money gone to reinvest? Reinvest in the squad so you can stay in the Premier League and sustainably.
The other thing is, they could get another somewhere between 20 and 40 million. I don't know how long is left on Max Aarons' contract, but they could get somewhere between 20 and 40 million from Max Aarons. which is another big financial boost. And then they can reinvest the money from the two of them into like five or six other players. But I feel like what they're going to do is not reinvest, and they're just going to be happy with their money because they know they're getting relegated.
Yeah, exactly. And they go back to the, because they know they're good enough to get promoted from the Championship, but they know they're not good enough to stay in the Premier League. So they'll go down to the Championship, they win the Championship easy, and then back up the following season. And I never want to see Norwich in the Premier League again. I have to be completely honest. I am so sick of Norwich. I hate their business model. I hate how content their owners are at getting relegated and going back up. And then
the promotion money's good, man.
No, but I'm so sick of it.
I know.
Them owners don't care. So why should we care about Norwich? Like, they don't want, they have no ambition to stay in the Premier League. They know they're getting relegated. They know that they're on the off chance to stay up. And they're like, oh,
fucking fat Timu Pukki up front. Oh, they got a fit Timu Pukki last time and it wasn't enough. Now they've got a fat one. He's older. He's 2 years older. He was already too old for the Premier League. He's 2 years older.
Absolutely. Like, I admire the football that Daniel Farke tries to play with Norwich, but it's so naive. It's so silly. I'm actually annoyed.
He's a manager that deserves a better job because he actually plays nice football, but at the same time he's never done anything to earn himself a better job because he can't, because he's stuck with the same squad he has and they're not good enough to do anything in the Prem.
And maybe if they do get relegated this season, obviously I don't see him getting the sack because the owners seem very content with them going up and down being a yo-yo club. He should show some intent,
but if he manages to keep them up, he should leave.
If he manages to keep them up, he should get manager of the year. Regardless of what any other manager does, he should get manager of the year, because that is going to be an achievement and a half.
Oh, my God. All
right, we're going to move on to the halfway kickoff. Saturday evening kickoff, after that little Norwich tangent. Brighton, welcome back to home fans at the Amex. And then they were playing Watford, newly promoted Watford, who impressed so well on Game Week 1. 2-0 Brighton. Irish hero Shane Duffy banging in a wonderful header.
I was so happy when he did that. One, what a fucking header. But two, for a man who went to Celtic, he thought, like everyone thought, I'm sure he thought as well, okay, that's a nice place for him to go. He can play well there, round out his career, just sort of ease himself into retirement, have a couple of seasons there. He's going to maybe win a couple of titles with Celtic. It'd be a great finish to his career. Obviously, proud Irishman, going to Celtic, that's where you want to be. But it didn't quite work out, and he came back to Brighton, and they had the gap in defence. They sold Ben White, and Shane Duffy is a very solid defender. He's the season before Ben White broke through, he played very well in the Premier League as well. Him and Lewis Dunk were a solid pair. So to see him come back in, he's put in a decent performance defensively, and then to get the goal as well, show his aerial threat, show what pretty much makes him worth having in the team. And it was great to see. I was very happy for him, and he seemed delighted after the game with it as well.
It looks to me as if Brighton have finally broken their XG curse. Two wins to start the season, two goals in each of them games.
Neil Maupay scoring both.
Yeah, exactly.
Shocking.
Brighton have always played beautiful football. Graham Potter is one of the more exciting young managers in the league. And it just, I don't rate Neil Maupay that highly, I have to say. But if he can continue with this, and even if he can reach the 12 goal mark this season, that would be such a huge help to Brighton. If Brighton can score a few more goals, if they can break the XG curse, they will stay up comfortably.
Yeah.
Because they play beautiful football, they're defensively solid. It's just they've won
the best midfielders in the league.
Yeah, Eve Bissouma, he's going to get snapped.
He played fucking amazing in that game as well.
How he hasn't been snapped up by a bigger club is
His assist from Maupay's goal was what everyone loves about Eve Bissouma. He saw where the ball was going, he waited until they had already committed themselves to make the pass, and then he was fucking onto it like a flash. Wins it back, and easy as you like, Neil Maupay slots at home.
Very solid win for Brighton. On the other side, Watford. It wasn't a bit of a drop-off after game week one, but I do think that they're going to be fairly solid this season. Watford looked very impressive in game week one. Again, they're a bit of a yo-yo club themselves.
They are.
But
they're not as bad.
I think they're going to be safe this season. I think Sisco is has done wonders since he's committed. He's been a very good man. He has the highest win percentage of any Watford manager. They have a few good players. Sarr looks good. Emmanuel Dennis up top looks like he's going to bang in a few.
Yeah, they've got a couple of decent signings in. Sarr, they've somehow managed to hold on to him.
We were linked from last year after failing with the Sancho bid originally. I think Watford will be safe. Disappointing for him, but
it is only right that Watford are safe because Troy Deeney does not deserve to finish his career in the Championship. He is a Championship striker that deserves to finish his career in the Premier League.
I'm still gutted over my failed bet I put last year that Troy Deeney would sign for Tottenham under Jose, and it did not work out, so I'm still a bit gutted over that. Moving on to our beloved Manchester United. Disappointing draw at St Mary's there against Southampton yesterday.
It was.
It's 2 points dropped that we couldn't afford to drop if we wanted to have any realistic chance of winning the league, in my opinion. The other title contenders will not drop points.
I think it's
like
far too early to say that.
I think yesterday
Man
was
Man City lost on the opening day of the season.
Yesterday was a reality check. It was a reality check for all United fans who got excited.
No, I think this season you're going to see big clubs dropping a lot more points than little clubs, because as we've spoke about, that having your fans back and having, it's not even just same, it's not the same effect as any other season having your fans with you. It's having your fans back after 18 months without them getting to see you play. It does not matter. You win the ball back, there is a massive roar. You play a 5-yard pass, you get a clap. There's just something different about it that makes me think there's going to be a lot of the smaller clubs getting points out of the big six this season. And that's why it's not worried me too much that we got it. I'm obviously we've tied the record for the most away games without losing.
Yes, we haven't lost an away game in the Premier League since January 2020. That was a 2-0 loss in Liverpool. 27 games away from home unbeaten in the league, joined with the invincible Arsenals.
Yes.
If the Invincibles, yeah.
Invincible Arsenals.
I had to. I was clarifying just in case. If anyone's listening to a football podcast and doesn't know who the Invincibles are, it'd be a bit silly. But yeah. I'm just clarifying for those who might not know. We can break that record against Wolves next Sunday, but I can't celebrate that record.
It's a little sour note on a very very sweet subject.
It's an incredible record to equal. But the way we equaled it is so disappointing because, look, we're going to say four main challengers, all right? There's four teams that everyone has a general consensus that will make the top four, and that is United, City, Chelsea, Liverpool.
Back to the good old days.
Ourselves and Liverpool have had the easiest running. Now, Chelsea have had their opening two fixtures against Palace and Arsenal.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we are saying Arsenal's a fallen giant, but they're...
Well, it's two derby matches that shouldn't really be derby matches anymore because it's just one team that's
exactly
better.
And we'll be talking about that now more in a few minutes. City, obviously, as you said, they lost their opening game, but that was against Spurs, a big six team. So, while that's dropped
points... Harry Kane team!
But while that's dropped points, it's dropped points against a big club who we have not played yet. We dropped points to the team that has been bottom of the league since they bet Liverpool in January. Their form since then, they are bottom of the league. All the relegated teams have won more games and picked up more points than Southampton in that time period. I get their fans are back, but we started the game so well and so impressively. Then we conceded a goal against a run of play.
Took
our foot off the gas. Fred had a disaster class. Anthony Martial, I genuinely never want to see him put on a United shirt again. This is a player, when he first broke in and we first signed him, and I loved him.
You could not have wrote a script for a better debut for a Man United player.
But it's just, he's been here it's going on 6 years now. He's had plenty of time to prove himself. He's chipped in with the odd goal here and there.
He does get important goals, to be fair to him. He gets goals in big games. But it's... See, there's a lot of strikers who feed off the little games and they don't have those moments in big games, but he's the complete opposite. He's a glorified Divock Origi. He scores big goals in big games and that's it.
But he lets way too many games drift him by.
He's not involved in every game he plays. Divock Origi, you'll never see a game that he's played where he doesn't put in max effort. Martial looks like he doesn't give a shit half the time.
If Martial doesn't have a moment of magic, he contributes nothing. His link-up play is useless. His hold-up play is useless. You know, he gets bullied. His movement is terrible. His work rate is shocking. There is he has the moments of brilliant, world-class, amazing talent that he can turn it on at any given moment. But they're few and far between, and we can't keep accommodating for it. He cannot be Manchester United's number 9.
I think send him out on loan to Italy. Apparently Romelu Lukaku learned how to play with his back to goal in Italy. And if he learns how to play like Lukaku in a fucking year, man.
Trust me, I am looking forward to talking about Lukaku later on. But very disappointing. But we have to give all credit to Southampton.
They put in a shift.
After a strong first half showing, they fought back. Then we came out of the blocks in the second half. We got the goal. It looked like we were going to kick on. And then we took our foot off the gas again. And we didn't kick on. And Southampton were the better team. I hate the narrative on Sky Sports commentators that, oh, well, it'd be great if Southampton can hang on for a point when they had the better chances. Adam Armstrong should have buried that chance. You should have given him no chance.
From Dan De Gea, though.
Yeah, it was a good save. Fantastic. It was most certain. But
and then like 5 minutes later with the free kick, I've never been more panicked in my life.
Oh my goalkeeper
comes.
That was terrifying.
Like, why is Zan's not open? Why is he not catching it? What? Oh no.
Absolutely terrifying. Trust me. Anytime James Ward-Prowse winds up a free kick against United, I start panicking. I start hyperventilating. Honest to God, I've had so much PTSD from his free kicks against us.
He's so good.
And then all the set pieces, well, and you can see that they were targeting De Gea near post, rightfully so, because De Gea is useless when it comes to.
They got very close with the corner as well. Che Adams heading across goals and
all. Yeah, Adam Armstrong tried to play it across.
No, that's again what they said on Sky Sports. There is 0% chance Adam Armstrong was not trying to put that into the back of the net.
I'm going
to
give him the benefit of the doubt.
I don't blame him.
The way his head was facing, if that was him trying to go for a goal, he completely misjudged the flight that ball.
I think that's what happened. Because if he was not trying to put that in the back of the net, what the fuck is wrong with him? It's not that hard. He was like, what was he, like 4 yards out at most? Mm. And De Gea was running across the goal line. That should have been a shot. If that wasn't a shot, he's insane, because putting that back into the mixer, there was clearly more Man United players in the immediate proximity of him than there were Southampton ones. Unless he was looking for a handball or something fucking cheeky like that. Stupid decision.
Well, I think Southampton had the better of the chances. I think the narrative that they were holding on for a point is completely false. I think
that's two chances we can think of right now. Adam Armstrong had two where he could have scored. How many chances can you think of that United had that they should have
scored? Half chances. We went into okay areas and did nothing.
Literally, the best chance that I can think United had was when Jadon Sancho wasn't quite fast enough.
Yeah.
When Luke Shaw fizzed that ball across and Sancho wasn't quite fast enough. That is the next biggest chance we had, in my opinion.
Exactly. All credit to the Saints. They, in my opinion, they more than deserved their point. Unlucky not to get a winner.
They were unlucky not to win the game. Very unlucky. The way the goal went in, it was just Alex McCarthy shot himself.
Yeah, he panicked at it when he saw.
I reckon a different camera angle, we would have saw some brown stains all over Gaffer.
All credit to the Saints, full fucking credit for their point, well deserved, and 2 points that United dropped that they couldn't afford to drop, and I think it'll cost them, when you look back at the end of the season, it'll be results like this that will cost them, because I don't see us having a sustained title chance without signing a world-class central defensive midfielder, and with 8 days left in the window, unlikely to happen.
Yeah, there's still the possibility of Jesse Lingard and Rice, some deal being worked out there. But Declan Rice, I don't think, wants to be a Man United player.
I think he has his heart set in Chelsea. And even then, if he was willing to come to United, I don't think the West Ham are going to... It'll take an awful lot of money, along with Lingard, for them to consider. And I don't think
United... It'd be a 40 or 50 million fee, as well as Jesse Lingard, which, when you think about it, it's worth it, but...
It's more than worth it. We won't pay it.
Yeah.
We won't pay it.
It's an awful lot.
But yeah, full credit to Southampton. So then we move on to the other 2 p.m. Kickoff. Nuno returns to his former club, Wolves. 1-0 victory. Not in a very eventful game, but I suppose Harry Kane also made his return to the Tottenham first team. What do we think of this? What do you think of the whole Harry Kane saga? Is he going to stay? Will he go?
Well, there's too many other things that Manchester City may be looking at for Harry Kane to be still trying to force his way out of the club. So I think he's had to accept. He probably will have to stay. I think it's very unfortunate to see, because Kane went about it so maturely in that he openly said, I want to leave to win trophies. Like, I love Tottenham. I've done what I've done for Tottenham, and I just can't spend my career here because I want to win trophies. And it's a very true statement, a very fair statement. And the disrespect that's been put on him by Daniel Levy refusing to let him go for any amount. Like, he must be asking for the most fucking mind-blowing, insane amount for Man City to say no to that, but yes to 100 mil for Jack Grealish. Like, you have to take into account that they need to be asking 200 mil plus for Man City to be saying no.
Well, the rumoured fee is 150 million. I think that Daniel Levy is well within his rights to ask for that fee.
Yeah, I think that fee as well, Man City would have already agreed to, and it would already be a done deal. So I think the fee that Levy wants is either something like that, along with a couple of players.
Why did Harry Kane sign a 6-year contract?
I don't know.
What, that he has put himself, 6-year contract with no release clause, a gentleman's agreement that he keeps referring to. Gentleman's agreement means fuck up in Daniel Levy's world. He wants what's best for Tottenham. Harry Kane is by far their best player. Top goal scorer in the league, top assister in the league. 3 years left his contract. He's not going to give any City any sort of discount. Why would
see
he?
See how good Dele Alli Penn was.
But why would he give? Why would he give City any sort of discount? I feel absolutely no sympathy for Harry Kane here at all. I think he's handled the situation actually fairly poorly. I think if that was not Harry Kane, if that was Paul Pogba, he would be getting crucified in the media. Because yeah. Harry Kane, we give him the benefit of the doubt. I love Harry Kane as a player.
I see, I think
he deserves some criticism.
I think it was the, what was it called? The whatever conversation he did when he went out at the end of last year with Gary Neville.
The overlap.
Yeah. Mm. That itself, he's going to put himself in the best light possible. But I think that conversation and the way he went about that, the way he wasn't just straight up saying like, no, I want straight out of this club is fucking going to run my career into the ground or that. He wasn't saying anything like that. He just was pretty much saying, my time's up here, I want to go. And it was a very, very mature way to say it. But obviously he has backed himself into the situation where he can't just say, my time's up, I want to go.
If he signed a 3-year contract or a 4-year contract when he did, then he would be talking only of a year in his contract left, and then Levy would have to sell.
Yeah.
Because he'd be under pressure of losing Harry Kane for free. Harry Kane has put himself in this position because he put blind faith in Tottenham Hotspur and in Daniel Levy and the project they had with absolutely no assurances, no way of getting out of this. He's backed himself in this corner like an amateur, and now he's got upset that he negotiated a terrible deal for himself. This is all on Harry Kane. Daniel Levy will show no mercy, and he will do the best possible deal for Tottenham, and I agree with Levy here 100%.
Levy's not in the wrong, but at the same time, I don't think Kane's too far in the wrong either. Like, I can see where Kane's coming from. I think the way Kane went about it was fair. I think that's the one thing about this saga is you won't see, it's not going to turn too sour. It's not going to turn into every time Kane comes to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, he gets fucking booed off the pitch. I don't see that ever happening.
No, I don't see it. Not after, he got a fairly good reception there yesterday, which was nice to see. I do agree with you. I feel like he's only come back because he realised he probably won't get the move this summer. So it was nice seeing with the reception. I suppose back to the game itself. Spurs have started the season very solidly. 2 clean sheets, 2-1-0s. Nothing crazy to phone home. Yeah. It's not.
Not the same way they started last season, where Kane and Son were just boat on fire, giving fucking
very solid, very consistent.
They had something like fucking 6 goal involvements or something.
Yeah,
each. All the other person involved in the goal was the other one of the two of them. After like 3 weeks, it was crazy. And then Kane had that 4-assist game where I think 3 of them were for Son.
Yeah, exactly. That was a crazy game. And then on the other side of the spectrum, Wolves, a team that we have tipped on the Nozcast before at our end of season review, and then to ourselves when we were talking season and start, When Nuno said he was leaving Wolves, we tipped them to struggle this season.
Yeah.
We tipped them to be potential relegation candidates. And it looks like they're living up to that billing. No goals in the first two games, no points.
Before the season started, I never would have said relegation. I would have said low mid-table. Maybe they'd push on and do something decent. Now, having seen them play those two games, it's hard not to let a thought of relegation creep in. Well, and this is coming from the man who just said Crystal Palace. Mm. I don't think we're looking bad enough to get relegated. Mm. But they just haven't looked... They haven't looked threatening. Like, Trinicao has started off... Well, I don't... Like, not really started off great, but he's been getting a couple of shots on target in, which is at least something, which is a good sign. But again, they've got him for a year. It's not going to be too game-changing if he does play too, like, that well. All they're really doing is making money for Barcelona. They're going to end up low towards the bottom of the table. I'd say the max they'll get is 14th.
I'm worried for them. Like, as I said, you know my feeling. I said this initially. We watched the last game of the season here and recorded the end of season review on the same day. It was United versus Wolves. Nuno's last game, he jumped ship. It seems like all their players seem to want to jump ship.
Yeah.
There's rumours about Ruben Neves leaving. That could easily happen before the end of the window. Bruno Lage has said that he would, if a suitable offer came in for Neves, he would go. Adama Traore is apparently very high on Spurs' shortlist. That's according to Fabrizio. Yeah, I know. That came out of left field. That was only this morning. So it looks like he could be jumping ship.
Oh, yes.
I am very worried.
Like to replace Harry Kane.
Honestly, God, I'm extremely worried for Wolves. I think that they could be looking at championship football next season.
To be fair, I think Adama Traore leaves. I don't think that's a big miss at all. They're missing that outlet of just, fuck it, we need to waste 5 minutes. Go on, Adama, you run around there for a little bit. Because he literally just, he will battle to the end to get the ball. But he's liable to give away a free kick. He has no end product. He's not a waste of a position on the pitch in that, because he is quite good at dribbling and he's such a powerful runner and he has so much strength that he can hold all the players off. But what's the point in all that if you can't stick across into the box or the ball into the back of the net?
I agree. It just feels like a lot of our players seem to have lost faith in the Wolves project.
Yes, and definitely.
For me, that's an indictment of lack of vision. They had sustainable success in the Premier League.
It was when Matt Doherty went. Everyone went out the window. It was.
It
was just as soon as they had them, they had such a fixed starting team.
They had a great team spirit.
It was so hard for anyone to get into it. But at the same time, all of the players on the outskirts were still involved and they were still getting their games. Whereas as soon as you took one of those starting players out, and it was quite an important one to be fair, Matt Doherty for Wolves was a very important player. As soon as they took him out, it just seemed to fall to pieces.
But it's the same thing though. I'm convinced something happened behind the scenes last year, because Wolves turned very boring last year. Nuno looked completely disinterested. The whole team looked like they stopped loving football. They look like they stopped enjoying playing the sport. And if anything, it's just they've got worse this year. Even worse than they were last year. And at times, they were a hard watch last year. I think, look away, Wolves. Look away. Like, even if you stay up, this is not going to be an exciting year for you. This is going to be a year to forget. But then we move on to the last game of Super Sunday. The London derby between Arsenal and Chelsea, the return of the big man Romelu Lukaku, and he more than delivered.
By God, Pablo Mari.
He got bullied.
He needs some therapy. Yeah, he has been completely and utterly rominated.
I was waiting for that one. Oh God, what a term. And that's not the last time we're going to hear that term mentioned on the Nozcast.
No, it is not. I feel like that will be almost a weekly input.
I am just so happy. You know my pins are on the cap. I've always rated him so highly. I tipped him to be top goalscorer of the Euros. I was good when we sold him. I just think you get Romelu Lukaku in your team, he guarantees you goal. I genuinely feel like he is the missing piece in the jigsaw for Chelsea. And now they have him, I think they are the team to beat for me in Premier League. And
I was making the argument all year last year that Tammy Abraham should have been playing. because he has that, he has the ability to hold the ball up. He has that, like, the finisher's instinct, and he's decent in the air. All of which Romelu Lukaku just has in abundance. Like, he's so much better in each of those things, and he's quicker, and he's stronger, and he's just, he's like what Tammy Abraham will dream of being, is Romelu Lukaku. And the fact that they brought him in, it just seems to be, it is the perfect fit. It's the perfect fit. He's back with Chelsea.
Yeah,
he looks very happy to be back with Chelsea, yeah. And he looked even happier to be scoring against Arsenal.
Exactly, and he just absolutely, he tore him apart from minute one. Oh God, the amount of times he turned Mari. Oh God,
Giles.
He just absolutely completely bullied him. He brought everyone into the game. His hold of play since he moved to Inter, Conte just took him to the next level. His all round game is. His play with his back to goal has improved immensely.
And I think playing with a player of the quality of Martinez up front with him did him such favours in that he learned how to hold the ball up and lay it off.
Exactly.
And we didn't quite see all of the passing ability that he's gained, but he has gained passing ability.
Exactly. And his assists have increased exponentially.
Yes.
He always guaranteed you goals. He was always a nuisance. But he has just evolved. He is the complete striker right now. He offers chances. He can run in behind. He's deceptively quick. He is unbelievably strong. His all-round play, his whole of play is fantastic. He can do everything. He is the
like,
forward.
Like, looking at the pitch, he looks like an outlier. He looks like he doesn't belong there because he's too big and he's too strong and he's too
like,
quick.
He's like the Premier League version of Yoel Romero. He is just a freak of nature. He is, honestly, God, he's a specimen.
It's like if Akinfenwa was good at football.
I remember the day that we sold him, and you know how much I loved him. And
I loved him a lot.
We were lucky enough to witness him live at Old Trafford when we went over. I am gutted that he is not playing for Man United right now, but I'm so happy that he's finally getting the universal respect he deserves. Because that's one thing, United fans unfairly disrespected Romelu Lukaku.
To be fair,
completely
I
unfairly.
Think when Romelu Lukaku was at United, he got a bit of disrespect from United fans. He got a lot of disrespect from fans from everywhere else in the league. Because it was any touch he took that was a bit heavy, oh, he has a touch like a bus. Any time he missed, oh, he's not clinical. Like, it was anything that happened wrong, because everyone would love to see United fail, they just kept shitting all over him, and then it just became a thing, and then he started, like, not performing to the same level, so United fans started picking up on those things and saying them as well. But now, he's come back, and my God, in that first game, as he's shown, he does not have a touch like a bus. He can fucking turn better than a bus.
Exactly.
He can do everything better than a bus can do. Except deliver people to locations. Unless it's Pablo Mari into his own back
pocket.
Yeah,
exactly. I am sure if Pablo Mari wanted a fucking ride, man, he would take him. He took him for a few yesterday. Like, like he was bringing him all over the gap yesterday.
Oh,
it was fantastic. And just before we move on to Arsenal, I just want to say one thing, one last thing about Lukaku, and one last thing about Chelsea in general. I just think...
I'm not letting you move on to Arsenal for this, but yeah, go on.
We have to talk about Arsenal. We can't just can't ruin about Chelsea
got,
for the
got,
whole thing.
I've
but unfortunately, because I'm in love with this Chelsea team, I have to say, I think they're a fantastic unit. But we missed a trick. Our dietitians missed something in Lukaku's diet that caused him to put on a lot of weight, and you can see the dramatic difference. He was huge. He wasn't fat or anything. He was just like unnecessarily muscular, and it caused he lost a bit of his pace and a bit of his speed and a bit of his sharpness, which is why he had some heavy touches. The Inter doctors noticed it immediately, and within 2 or 3 weeks he slimmed down and he got into the best shape of his life, and now look,
he's gotten bigger than he was at Inter, but not as big as he was at United.
But he's stronger now, though.
Yeah,
like it's better muscle, he has proper muscle on now, it's lean muscle. And he looks faster, sharper, stronger. His whole game he's taken to the new, and he's going to take Chelsea to the new level. I told you before, I think Chelsea will win the league this season. That was before Lukaku came in.
Well, you said we will not let you get away with that. When you were saying this, you said, But you mentioned that Lukaku was going to sign Chelsea, and that was one of the reasons.
Yeah, well, yeah, I had said it to you. Yeah. I had said it to you with the idea in my head, because I always felt that they were going to target a centre forward. Yeah. I did feel like that. It turned out to be correct. They did sign Lukaku in the end. And I'm just more convinced. I'm convinced by the Tuchel project. The way he had them playing, the way they dominate games, how defensively sound they are, and now he is the final piece. And I said to you before we started recording this, and I'm going to say it now, I'm going to put my neck in the line here, I think he would bring out the best in Timo Werner. I think Timo Werner needed that big man to play with. He would play more. They're going to play with their 3-4-3, maybe with a 3-4-1-2, with them with two men up top. But I think they're going to play Werner more to the left this season, which you made the correct argument of saying that Pulisic is a fantastic option, but they have fantastic options all over their front three, and they will all rotate.
Well, seeing as you brought up my point about Pulisic, I'll make that point. Pulisic is better both left wing and striker than Timo Werner is. There's no one that can change my mind. He gets into better positions, he makes better runs, and that is the one thing Timo Werner is good at, is making runs. Just what Pulisic does is he stays on side. Shocker. Fucking mind blown for Timo Werner. What? There's an offside line? Also, like, Pulisic is not as clinical as he could be, but he's you can see his game developing as he's getting more minutes for Chelsea. You can see he's getting better. I think what's going to happen is he's going to make a breakthrough into the Chelsea team, and him and Lukaku are going to have a fantastic partnership up there.
I think
obviously think it's going to happen the same way, just with Werner.
But no, I'm not saying. I think Pulisic have a great season. I think Lukaku is going to integrate seamlessly into this thing. I think there's going to be a lot of rotation with Chelsea this year. I think we're going to see lots of different combinations in that front three, with Lukaku being the ever-present. He will be the one that will never be replaced. And we'll see Mount, Havertz, Pulisic, Ziyech,
Werner. I cannot wait to see Ziyech. That's what I was about to mention. Yeah. I cannot wait to see Ziyech setting up Lukaku.
Yeah.
Because he has got a delivery on him.
Yeah, he has got a delivery on him, man. Lukaku knows from back in the day. We're going to see.
Lukaku does not care how high that delivery is, how low that delivery is, how quick it is. He will fucking get to that delivery.
Exactly. And it's just, Lukaku is going to bring out the best in all their attacking. They were missing, they have so many attacking options, but they were missing the main man, that person that linked it all up.
Yeah.
They were hoping out to be Timo Werner, but Timo Werner is more of a supporting striker. Even at Leipzig, he had a big man beside him. He was a Paulson. Look, I'm not saying, but he had some of the playoffs, some of the work off. Always.
He played solo up front a lot for them.
He did, but he excels with all the pressure's off in this season.
Yeah.
It is off. Lukaku is going to shoulder all that pressure. I think we're going to see Timo Werner. Timo Werner, look, he missed a lot of chances. He was disappointing for the price tag, but he still scored an awful. I think he was their top goal scorer in all competition. I know Jorginho was the top goal scorer in the league. He was their top assister. His runs always caused problems to the opposition. And if he makes their runs now, he's going to have a lot more space to make them with Lukaku there, because Lukaku's going to take the attention of most of the strikers. His presence is so scary for opposition defenders that it'll free up Werner a lot more. Yeah. Timo Werner is going to excel now with Lukaku there. Pulisic will excel. Mount is going to excel even further than he did. Havertz is going to come into his own this season. Chelsea are so frightening. I am so convinced of the Chelsea title chance this year. I'm convinced they will win the league. They've never gone more than 5 seasons without winning the league.
Seeing as you're shouting on there, and
they'll do it this season.
Seeing as you're shouting on about Timo Werner, I must say what I think is going to happen to him is January or next summer, one of them, Lewandowski's moving away from Bayern, on whichever one that is. They signed Timo Werner for about a third the price, or about half the price. Lewandowski doesn't have long left in his contract, I don't think. I think they signed Werner for about half the price that they sell Lewandowski for, because Werner's going to do fucking nothing for Chelsea again. Dog shit player. Good team, but dog shit player.
We're going to have to agree to disagree on that one.
I think when he goes to Bayern is when he's going to play really well, because he gets to play against those stupidly high lines again. He gets to play against those lesser quality goalkeepers that I have mentioned before. I think that's where he excels, is in the German league. The way German football is played suits him so well with the high line. It really gives him a chance to let his legs loose, get in behind, because he's clearly not good at standing on the last man. Like, he's good at running in behind. He is not good at standing on the last man. He's not good at turning the shoulder of the last man to get to a ball, because he turns too early, he goes too early, he gets caught offside. Whereas in the Bundesliga, a lot of the lines are held fairly like close to the halfway line, in that he can't be offside.
Wait and see, my friend. Timo Werner will do good this season.
Final point before we move on to Arsenal. It is very, very rude if we discuss this game and don't mention how good Reece James played.
Reece James on fire. He's absolutely
like, what a fucking day. What a fancy football player. He got a clean sheet, a goal and an assist.
Absolutely insane. I'm good with a chance from out before game week one, but at the time it made sense. After his showing now, he's making me rue that decision. Absolutely fantastic player. Arguably the best right back in England now, and that is saying something because there's an awful lot of great right backs. Trent is certainly has a say in that discussion. Kyle Walker is fantastic all around. Wan-Bissaka is the best defensive.
He's from Tonga. He's not English. If I knew he was involved, I would have disagreed.
Look, Reece James, absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, he started the season very well.
Incredible performance. And
then we move on to the complete opposite.
Yes, we move on to the most disappointing team in England at the moment. I don't think anyone can have any arguments with that. Arsenal fans, you always complain. You certainly have every right to.
You expect the fucking world of your team. You got the best manager that your club has ever had sacked. And it was the worst thing ever. Since then, it's just been straight downhill.
I think the best way to sum this up is that two games against... Look, I don't think even the most deluded of Arsenal fan was expecting a result against Chelsea. But after the disaster that was last season, to come into the first game of this season, lose to newly promoted Brentford...
And not even concede to their talisman.
They concede the goals that they conceded from a throw-in. Like, oh god, that is just giving flashbacks to Rory to that shit that when you were getting bullied by Stoke all them years ago. To get battered by Chelsea and get beat around the bush here. If Chelsea wanted it, that could have been 6 or 7. Chelsea took their foot off the gas at half time and they were toying with us. You should have been spirited enough second half, I suppose. But if Chelsea wanted another goal, they were scoring another goal. A Burn then a wonder save stops Lukaku from getting his brace. Look, and it's not going to get any better next week.
Yeah, well, fucking hell, Burn Leno, his position in jeopardy now. Big Aaron Ramsdale.
Yeah, 30 million Aaron Ramsdale, who's got relegated at every club he's been at. Ooh, quaking in his boots. Ooh.
What a fucking dog shit.
Oh, God, I think...
What a way to show you have no ambition at all. Let's get fucking Aaron Ramsdale.
Do you know what?
He should not be any big club's third choice goalkeeper. Never mind fucking potentially their starting one. He is not good enough to be any big. Or no, he could be their third choice. I meant he should be their second choice. He is not good enough to be any club's second choice goalkeeper. Tom Heaton is a better goalkeeper than him.
I don't disagree with that because I don't rate Aaron Ramsdale as
well. Shit. Because if you do rate him, you're fucking deluded.
He could make us eat our words. He's young.
Maybe.
But at the moment, at both clubs he's been at Bournemouth and Sheffield United, he has shown absolutely nothing to suggest that he deserves this move.
No, because he makes the odd decent save, but at the same time he's conceding 2 or 3 goals.
But as Roy Keane would say, it's his job.
Yeah.
He's a goalkeeper. He makes to make saves. And he doesn't make an awful lot. He doesn't make wonder saves.
He's a solid goalkeeper. I'll give him that.
He's an okay.
He is a relegation or a
mid-table at best.
Championship goalkeeper. No, relegation from the Prem or mid-table at championship. He is not a goalkeeper you can rely on to get you up out of the championship.
I just don't understand. How do you sell Emi Martinez, who was on your books for 25 million, and then the following season, go sign Aaron Ramsdale from relegated Sheffield United for 30 million? The business model just does not make sense. Shout out to the company that I work for, Paddy Power, their social media team, and I found this post hilarious. I think everyone can agree with this. It's like, congrats to Arsenal with continuing with their policy of spending big in every transfer window with improving their squad. By absolutely no means of improving their squad at all. You spent 30 million on Martin Odegaard, who you had on loan last season, who was okay.
I will say Martin Odegaard for 30 million is a very good signing. For 30 million, he's shown with Arsenal last year, he brought so much influence. He brought a lot of attacking excitement that was not there when he was not there, because Emile Smith Rowe doesn't bring attacking excitement.
I disagree with you. I think Emile Smith Rowe is a very... I think he's exciting.
He's bang average.
I don't think he's a world beater, but we're looking at Arsenal, and the only bright light I see in Arsenal right now is the two young lads, Smith Rowe and Saka. Well, I see
two bright lights now, which is Saka and Odegaard. Beforehand, the only bright light was Saka, and by God, that man, I feel bad for him. There's no way he can have confidence at the moment.
But he's having to shoulder the responsibility of a huge club like Arsenal on his shoulders. All that toxic atmosphere.
All that. He is so unfortunate because, like, obviously he missed a penalty. That's not great in the Euros. But he has the most toxic national support in the world, all just being racist. And then he comes back to play for Arsenal, which is the most toxic fan base in the most toxic nation in the world.
In fairness, one thing, while I agree with you 100% that he has the most toxic club support in the world, they never target him, because even they can admit that he is the only one that makes you proud to watch Arsenal play. And that being said, Kieran Tierney as well, of course, like he's
a player that I don't think he's a bad player, but I think a lot of people rate him a lot higher than he should be rated.
I agree with you 100% there. He is nowhere near as good as people make him out to be. But
people put him in like top five left backs in the league and shit. And
no, I'm like, not.
They played against a team that have two better left backs than
them. Mark's not a better left back, a better wing back, for sure.
I mean, how many goals does Tierney have this season?
Look, I just think, that I agree with you, I think Tierney is a good left back, he's not a great left back, but he will always put in a shift, he will always try his best, and that is something that can't be said about a lot of people in that Arsenal team. And that Arsenal team is probably, well, when you look at them on paper, you only see a team on paper, and sometimes they don't go out and give their best. You look at the Arsenal team on paper, if you covered the team name at the top of that team sheet, you'd think that's fucking bang average, mid-table team. That is their level. That team is so bang average. Honest to God.
Looking at it now, like, the...
Cover the team name. You're looking at flash scores there. Cover Arsenal.
Having Rob Holdman goes.
Cover the name of Arsenal, and you look at their team, their starting lineup, and you're thinking, fucking hell, Chelsea.
There are genuinely three players in that starting lineup that I rate.
Look at the Arsenal team from yesterday, right?
You're
looking at it right now.
And there are three players.
Who walks into that Chelsea team? Does any one of them players...
Not a single one of them players plays for Chelsea, but there's three of those Arsenal players I'm rating. That's Nicola Pepe, I think...
70 million Nicola Pepe.
No. You see, when you take that into account, you can't rate him.
He shows up in the Europa League.
He finished last season well in both Prem and Europa League. In the Prem, he was playing well. But he's not a player that can bring a team to success. He's a player that can be carried to success and will perform well if he is carried to success. But he's not a player that can bring a team.
So what you're saying is the cherry on top of a cake. But Arsenal don't have a cake.
Yeah, no.
They can't afford
a cherry on a plate at the moment.
They're a fucking, I don't know.
And there's Bukayo Saka, obviously. He's a very promising young player. He looks like he needs to get out of Arsenal.
Yes,
and then another player that needs to get out of Arsenal is Martinelli. But again, he is a player.
His legs made a fucking.
He is a player that I fucking love, and I think he could be so good, but he gets injured too often. And he's already had four or five injuries affect him so far at Arsenal. I don't think he's even 20.
I can safely say, all right, I'm going to put my neck in the line.
He's 20 years of age, he's not even 21 yet.
And this is why this prediction is going to be bald, because he quite clearly is talented, he is so young. He has always impressed every time he's played, but I will promise you, Martinelli will do nothing in the game. He will do nothing. He is another Jack Wilshere. He is another Yaya Sanogo. He is another Abu Diaby.
Well,
he is going nowhere. That lad cannot stay fit. Nowhere.
There's one player I would allow to compare him to, and that's Theo Walcott. Because
Theo Walcott's done more in the game than Martinelli will ever do.
Theo Walcott has done a lot more in the game than Martinelli has done.
And he will do.
When you look at what Theo Walcott did, he did get the couple of extra years without the injury where he was playing for Southampton on his first couple at Arsenal. He didn't get injured as much. But once he started getting injured, it was whenever he came back, he has an influence and then he gets injured. And that's what I see with Martinelli is when he does play, he scores and he assists and he does things in the game. He didn't do anything that game. But he does things in, like, most games he plays, he is there. And he is making himself known and not in a good way for the defenders. He's dangerous. But I can see him having a very Theo Walcott career where he just keeps getting injured. It looks like, oh, that's set him back another 6 months. He's going to come back from that. There'll be a lot of doubt about him coming back, whether he's going to be able to bring it back or not. He'll come back, he'll score a goal or two, look promising, and then another 2 or 3 months down the line, he's out for another 6 weeks. And you're just there looking at it, and you just see a slow deterioration down. I think that's what's going to happen. It's unfortunate because he is such a talent.
See, that is what I know people listening to this are probably going to be thinking, Jesus, Noz, man, you're being so harsh on what is a very promising young talent. And he is, I am by no means denying that this boy has talent. This boy is threatening. He is exciting. But there's one thing that I rate above all else, above all talent in the world. You have to be there to be selected week in, week out. You have to be consistently fit and reliable.
And you can't do that.
Because you cannot guarantee. Martinelli, you can never guarantee what you're going to get from him this season, because you can't guarantee he's going to play every game. Because you can nearly get... One thing you can guarantee about the lad, he's going to get at least 2 or 3 injuries a season, and they can be very severe. That lad, I don't know. Maybe he needs to bulk up. Maybe he needs to fucking work on his leg. Never skip leg day, mate, because this lad picks up so many injuries. There's something wrong there with the way he trains.
If Martinelli bulks up, though, that is a dangerous man. If he becomes like a little stocky boy that can hold off a fucking tackle, if he becomes like sort of that Eden Hazard or that Alexis Sanchez type of player, where they look frail and they look small, but they have the strength and they know their own ability and they can hold off a much bigger man, he could be so dangerous, but I don't see that happening.
But
at the same time, he is 20 years of age. He's still a boy. He just turned 20 as well a couple of months ago. So he still is a boy. There's a lot of time for him to make them improvements. Like he has another 3 years where he can be very dodgy. And then all of a sudden, if he starts playing well in 3 years' time, he still has all the time in the world to make a good career out of it.
Well, we've seen this story at Arsenal in the last 15 years, time and time again. A promising young player comes into the team and consistently gets injured. We've seen him with Wilshere, we've seen him with Ramsey, we've seen him with Oxlade Chamberlain, we've seen him with Walcott, seen him with Sanogo, Abu Diaby, Van Persie even, at his time at Arsenal, barring his last 2 seasons at Arsenal, consistently played with injuries. The Arsenal medical team has to take responsibility for all these injuries. Their training methods must be completely wrong. They must train them into the ground because there's something wrong. Something wrong to the core of Arsenal's medical team.
Sanchez, man.
They must be. Honest to God, there has to be something wrong because they're... How do all these players pick up so many injuries? What is wrong? What is wrong with the training methods at Arsenal? The medical team? Why are they always so injury prone? It just seems to be a common team with promising young Arsenal
players. It's not
players.
Even just the promising young ones. It's every Arsenal player. Every Arsenal player is always...
Even Saka. Saka is...
There's Saka. Like,
Saka picks up a few injuries this season.
You look at the big players, I suppose. Granit Xhaka, injury prone as fuck. Thomas Partey, injury prone.
Yeah, he is... Jeez, I nearly forgot he was on the books there because he never plays.
Aubameyang, injury prone.
Lacazette.
Injury prone.
Pepe.
They all are. None of them can stay fit. So that's just clearly the issue with Arsenal is that maybe stop spending 30 million on Aaron Ramsdale and spend 30 million on fucking getting a hospital in your training ground or some shit.
Yeah, no. Completely take out the entire Arsenal medical team because they have failed at their job for a long time. Abu Diaby, when he first came in, he looked like the second coming of Patrick Vieira.
He did.
He came in at around that time. He looked like the original Yaya Toure. And then the lad just could not, he could not, I think he played like, 14 games of football in his last 6-7 seasons at Arsenal.
He had 33 or 34 different injuries. Some of them were repeated.
That's negligence, man.
Negligence. He had 26 different injuries and then there was 34 total injuries, 26 different ones. So he got injured in 26 different ways at that club.
See, this is a topic that I feel that you, for those of you who don't know, Kyo is a qualified PT, personal trainer. If you knew that you were training someone who had they were frail, they were brittle, they had a certain injury. Certainly, you would plan that their training program around that.
Yeah, no, literally, that is what I do, is you have to ask about those things, and you make the program, and you take into consideration, oh, they have a bad knee, we won't stick them on a treadmill. But I recognise that medical staff don't know that much.
But that's what I'm saying, is that you, as you're a personal trainer in a gym in Ireland, all right?
In Trim.
Yeah, exactly, in Trim. These lads are getting paid obscene amounts of money for a professional football club.
And they can't keep players.
How? Like, why? This is negligence, man. This is neglect. This is incompetence at the highest level. And it sickens me. And it bugs me. And I've seen it at United. I've seen it creeping in United. Phil Jones sickens me. Players that can't stay fit piss me off to the highest level. I can feel the anger in my voice as I'm talking. Because it bugs me. Honest to God, it bugs me. Oh, it grinds my teeth, man. Oh, it sickens me. And there's just so many things. It's one of the many things rotten at that Arsenal Football Club. Oh my God, they are rotten from the core, from the owner to the manager.
Hey, don't you dare talk about Mikel Arteta. Take that back.
Look,
he is a great man. He is a beautiful man.
I think Arteta is a promising young coach.
He is potentially the best BTEC Cesc Fabregas there ever will be. There will never be a better shit version of Fabregas.
No, I think Arteta is a promising young coach.
Don't fucking list him.
But come on. It was a poison chalice.
He gives his players rest. That's the one thing he does that other managers haven't done. Is when there is an Arsenal player injured, you don't see them return to the starting team when they're back, which we saw with Theo Walcott time and time again under Arsene Wenger was. Walcott's back, starting team, he's playing up front.
Did you see the stat that was going around on social media yesterday?
No.
Mikel Arteta in his last 20 months, all right, at Arsenal Football Club, has lost as many games at the Emirates as Wenger lost in his last 7 seasons.
No fans. Those Arsenal fans, they're so good.
They've lost too many games. Arsenal are not a big team right now. They're still a big club. Big club status doesn't go for a long, long time. That stays around a lot longer than big team status.
Yeah.
Big team, not a chance. Big they're not
team
even
goes,
close.
Big team goes in a year.
Big, yeah, exactly. We were the biggest club in England. We weren't the biggest team. We weren't even close. We weren't in the top 6 biggest teams. Leicester are a bigger team. Everton, I would argue, are a bigger team right now.
I was going to say West Ham, and I thought
West Ham, bigger team. Leicester, bigger. Look, Leicester are getting close.
Wait, I thought Leicester are a bigger team, man.
Aston Villa. Bigger team.
No. That is an Emi Martinez. That only Emi Martinez can say that. And he can say that with full confidence.
When Emi Martinez made them comments that it was an upgrade leaving Arsenal for Aston Villa, people scoffed. They laughed at
him. When he first said that, everyone thought he was insane.
Yeah, and that is aged like a fine wine, that comment. But, alright, I suppose this has gone off on a bit of a tangent. I know it's random.
We're going to need to calm you the absolute fuck down.
Yeah, okay, no. Okay, we'll go back to it.
We'll let you have your final comment on the match, and then we'll move on and we'll give her a little quick thoughts about what's going to happen tonight.
Yeah. I think the reason that bugs me about Arsenal, the reason I went off on a tangent and a little mini rant, was because while I hate Arsenal fans and Arsenal fan TV, they have ruined the club for me, and I find their behaviour towards Wenger despicable. I respect the club. We've had some of our best Premier League battles with them. And it's a shame to see them rotten to the core like this. To see the club falling apart. And
when I think of Arsenal, all I think of is 8-2. That's literally it. Because since that was the day when I thought, they're not a big team. Since then, they've never proven themselves to be a big thing.
No, but it's because of...
And that was fucking...
This has been a slow deterioration.
That was 2012.
2011-12. So that was 2011 that game happened.
That was literally 10 years ago. 10 years ago, we played Arsenal, beat them 8-2, and that's when I stopped thinking they were a big team. And I haven't seen anything to prove that they are since.
And that's because of poor recruitment. Wenger kept him up for as long as he could at that level, competing for Champions League.
He didn't get recruitment either.
And they're the biggest spenders this season. Yeah. They have spent the most money in the transfer business. Look what they got.
Since Wenger's left, every other manager has gotten better backing than Wenger got.
Mm.
And it's crazy. Because None of them have nearly performed to the level he did.
It's absolutely insane. But as we said, Arsenal cannot be accused of not spending money. They've spent more money than any Premier League club this season, and they need to spend an awful lot more to get anywhere close, because their recruitment is absolutely all over the gap. Edu, hang your head in shame at what you've recruited, because this is a terrible transfer window for Arsenal. But with the money spent, with the fan base on firmly on his back after the disappointing show in last season, the last two seasons, the 2-8 place finishes back to back, as far as I can remember, with an FA Cup in there, but that's that paper over the cracks. And it looks like there's going to be absolutely no improvement on this season. Is Mikel Arteta under extreme amount of pressure? Could he be facing the sack in the coming weeks?
I think Arteta will get 2 more weeks. If Arteta loses the next 2 games, he's done. Let me just, because next week they're playing City. Exactly. I think if they sack him after a City game, it's harsh.
But we're genuinely looking at the prospect of Arsenal finishing the month of August with three games in that with no goals. Okay. Let alone no goals.
They've got Man City, and then they've got Norwich. If he does not come away with a fucking flying performance against Norwich, I'm talking minimum 3-goal win. I think that's it.
Is that enough to save his job, though?
I think a 3-goal win against Norwich buys him time. Not much time. At least a 3-0 win at Norwich shows that he might be able to put on a performance in the run of games they have leading up after that.
They have a North London derby after that, though, as well. I don't know if it's the next fixture, but it's the next fixture after that, if not the next fixture. They have a North London derby coming up.
They've got Burnley the week after. Burnley. And then they've got Spurs, yeah.
And we know they notoriously struggle with Burnley. They only got a point against Burnley. They lost at home to Burnley. Then they drew at Turf Moor.
I feel like Burnley might be a deciding factor, but they won't sack Arteta until they have a replacement, I hope. But this is Arsenal Football Club, so he's probably gone.
Why not go and target Antonio Conte, who was on the... We know how demanding he is, but Arsenal is still an attraction. They do have money. They have spent money.
And Antonio Conte would love to work, I think, with that team, because it's a very young team. So it's a lot of players that he could mould into his sort of style of play. Mm. But also, the attacking talent they have got, like, Saka used to play as a fullback. So they have attacking players that are willing to work back for him, which he will love. He'll love that work, right? Mm. So I think it would be a good option, but I think it's so harsh to sack Mikel Arteta. He was just sort of, he was put on a train that was on tracks fucking straight into a wall.
But it was a poison chalice, and I feel bad for him.
Tunnel not finished. He went into the mountain, and he's never coming out.
It's that job that, because he... It was a club he obviously would have had on his managerial dream list of clubs that he would have loved. Like Arsenal, after playing for them, it would have been a dream of his.
Yeah.
And to get that opportunity for his first managerial job, that was an offer he couldn't refuse, but he should have refused. Because anyone and their granny could tell you that was a poison chalice, that was a club on the downturn, on the decline. It was too big.
I don't think anyone
too big
a
first job.
I don't think anyone can save them. I think Conte's a great option to rebuild. But I think we're at least 2 seasons away from seeing Arsenal top 4.
I think we're at
which
least.
Is unfortunate.
I think we're at least.
As I predicted Arsenal to finish top 4 this season.
I wasn't going to do you dirty. I wasn't going to mention it, but I'm glad you mentioned it. It was the most outlandish, bold prediction you made. And this is the man who predicted Crystal Palace in the top 6.
This was also this season. But this was pre Lukaku signing. Obviously, with the signing of Lukaku.
Oh, you're bringing that out as well.
I mentioned that it was going to be a tight race between Arsenal and Chelsea, and this was before Chelsea had a striker, and I mentioned how Timo Werner didn't score enough goals. Lukaku scores enough goals. Lukaku moves them up and puts Arsenal into fifth in my original predictions, but by God, if I was to do some now, they'd be...
Don't worry.
They're pushing relegation, man.
Look, it's dark days for Arsenal. I think we're going to see Arteta sack at some stage of the season, whether he'll be the first managerial casualty. Look, there's a strong possibility of it. He's clearly the bookie favourite to be next for the sack. Well, first for the sack, I suppose, really. And you can't really argue when you look at their fixtures. Like, there's a strong possibility. Like, they should beat Norwich, of course. Everyone in the league should beat Norwich. Should beat Norwich. I'm not saying they will. They should beat Norwich. Arsenal have to beat Norwich.
I'm pretty sure it's a pretty... No.
It's at home, isn't it? It's at the Emirates.
Yes, it is at the Emirates. Every single Premier League club should beat Norwich at home.
Yes. There will be riots at the Emirates if they don't beat Norwich. If they start their first four games of the season, because we're assuming the assumption now, then the national assumption they're going to lose the season.
To score and do Lukaku shut up the Emirates.
Oh my God, it's my dream to see Norwich shut the Emirates up.
Imagine
Timo Pukki, 90-minute winner, seeing DT and troops going absolutely fucking crazy.
Imagine Arsenal fans chanting for Timo Pukki to play for them.
Oh my God, come play for Pukki. It couldn't be worse than what we got.
Oh, God. I think we got to move on from Arsenal.
Yeah, we got to move on.
We've spent a long time talking about our shit there.
Yeah, I think we spent a solid like 20 minutes on just Arsenal.
Yeah. So we'll take our...
But they're in big, big trouble. Before we close off, they're in huge trouble.
Okay, we got that point across.
Man. Huge.
Man, we got that point. You know what? I think Leicester might be a bigger team than Arsenal. Now, speaking of Leicester...
You might be right.
Speaking of Leicester, tonight we've got... Leicester against West Ham. Obviously, we were looking to round up the game week. This game hasn't happened yet. We're going to give a preview to it.
Yeah.
What do you think? How do you see this one going?
I think this is going to be an extremely entertaining game. I encourage anyone who has no plans on their Monday night, no work, no whatever. If you are free, if you have a television beside you, you stick this game on. I think this is going to be a very entertaining 2-all draw.
Serious pressure to have this up before it goes.
Yeah,
game,
this is your area of expertise, Kyle. You're going to have this shit up. There's pressure. The 8 o'clock kickoff, man. Time is ticking. This will be an entertaining game. I implore everyone, if you can watch this game, watch it. 2-all draw.
Yeah.
Entertaining 2-all draw.
2-all is what you think.
Entertaining 2-all draw. Put my balls on the table. Neck on the line. Going to be a very fun game. Watch it be a 0-0 there. Watch it be a boring 0-0 there.
Do you want to know... The King Gill prediction.
Always.
5-3, West Ham. Huge scoring game. Right. So, West Ham, since they moved into the London Stadium, every game the fans have been at, the fans have been depressed because they've seen their team being on losing form, being on shit form, nowhere near where West Ham should be. The fans are coming back after seeing their team fucking... overperformed beyond belief last season. Was it fifth that they finished in the end?
No, they finished sixth.
Sixth they finished in the end, right. A sixth place finish for West Ham.
Let me just double check that, because I'm actually, you've had me question myself. So I'll double check that.
So wherever they finished last season, they've seen West Ham put on the best showing they've put on in recent years. Yes, Jesse Lingard helped them big time and they don't have him now. But Benrahma started the season off brightly and he played well in preseason. I sort of had that in my head that he's going to play this season well. He is definitely good enough to fill in for that role because he is a better footballer than Jesse Lingard.
Yes, sorry, just a boy in there. What the fuck? It's saying that's completely wrong.
Here, I'll do it for you.
No, sorry, that's my bad. They did finish sixth. I was right, they did finish sixth. Leicester finished fifth, as they always do. In recent times, Leicester finished fifth, West Ham sixth.
Yeah, so it's West Ham fans back. That stadium has the potential for an insane atmosphere. It is probably, it's one of very few stadiums I can think of in the world that has a running track with potential for a big atmosphere. And when you hear them chanting about their fucking bubbles, man, I've heard them chant about their bubbles while losing, and it's a big atmosphere. If West Ham can start out fast, which they did last time out, if they can start out fast, sort of just get into the game quickly, get the fans on their side, that could be the most free-scoring game of the season. Because Leicester, we all know, are deadly. They've got Iheanacho up front, they've got Verdi up front, they've got Daka, who hasn't even been seen yet. But we saw him playing elsewhere. He was dangerous elsewhere. It was the Austrian League, wasn't it? Yeah. So
he looked very promising in the Euros, though, as well.
Oh, he looked good.
When he got his look in the Euros, he looked promising. Like, he looked
like Euros.
Yeah, he played the Euros, yeah.
For who?
Well, he's Belgian.
I thought he was African, to be honest.
No, he's Belgian.
Maybe that was FIFA.
Yeah,
he probably acted on FIFA and then he declared for
again, Belgium. I'm going to just double check because now...
To be honest, that probably sounds like what happened was he was African and then he declared for Belgium. But anyways, back to this. So I see West Ham and Leicester being very high goal scoring game. So West Ham started out very well. Antonio looked on fire. As I said, Benrahma looked great. Bowen is always dangerous. Leicester have the firepower up front. Iheanacho does not miss. And that is why, like, I can see it just being such a high-scoring game. West Ham have goals all over the pitch. Leicester have goals all over the pitch. Yeah, pretty much, I predict a high score. 5-3 is going to be what I say. I think 5-3 is too high of a score line for me to back a correct score on Sky Bet. I don't think they'll let you bet on 5 goals for one team. If they do, I will be backing it. It will definitely be at least 100-1, and I will be happy.
Just before I go back to the West Ham Leicester game, I stand corrected. I am after completely mixing up. I was talking about Doku for Belgium. You are right. Patson Daka is African, but he played for the national Zambian national team.
Yeah, I didn't know. I don't know
why
it's a green flag. I couldn't think of the nation.
Completely don't know why. I think the heat must be getting to me because I was convinced I was completely talking about the wrong player there. I do think I disagree with you. I actually, when it comes to the atmosphere at the London Stadium, I think that West Ham away used to always be a hugely intimidating fixture when it was at Upton Park. Because that stadium, while it wasn't the biggest, it held such an atmosphere. It was so daunting and intimidating to play against. Whereas now I feel like they lost a bit of that at the London Stadium. See,
they have a massive stadium, but they're a club that sell out their stadium. That's the good thing.
But I also feel that West Ham fans can be fairly fickle. And yes. I feel like they can turn their team very quickly. And I feel like Moisey's style of play last year, they end up in a lot of thrillers, like a lot of thrilling matches. But I do feel like they're a very workmanlike team. I feel like they're a team that actually benefited a lot from no fans, without the pressure of their home fans. Because they have always had a very lackluster home performances
at
the London Stadium.
I think what you notice is, with them performances, it was always, when the fans are behind them, they show up. But the fans turn against them. And when the fans turn against them most of the time, you'll see they have 2 or 3 away matches in a row and they'll do poorly. And then they'll come back to the home ground and they'll concede early or something. And that's enough. The fans are gone. The fans don't give a shit anymore. They hate them. But I think having seen all last season, seen such a high finish, seen the start of this season, I think the fans are going to get behind them from early. And that's why I say if West Ham get into the game early, it's a big high-scoring thriller. If West Ham don't get into the game early, I can easily see this being a 2-0 for Leicester.
I think Leicester are going to start the game strong. I just think that
I'm going to go check if I can back 5-3 now.
I agree with you. I do think this is going to be an entertaining game. I think West Ham, as the season went on, they kind of defy what a typical David Moyes team is. Is that David Moyes isn't exactly known for his thrilling games, especially at home. They're usually a very hard team to beat, a hard team to score against. But towards the end of the last season, we saw a lot of high-scoring games, and even the opening game of this season, the 4-2 away to Newcastle. They score a lot of goals, but they're getting increasingly leaky at the back. They do need to shore it up a little bit. And I think this is going to be a telling season. Will they drop off? Because they were a revelation last year. They were one of the better teams in the league, especially when they brought in Jesse Lingard. They had a real good go at Europe.
Okay, I'll be sticking my 5-for-3 bet for this week on West Ham to win 5-3 at odds of 150-1.
150-1, that's all.
That's pretty high odds.
150-1 for 5-3. Yeah. How many 5-3s do you see?
No, but I don't see many, but they're like 150-1 isn't bad.
That should be about 350-1.
Man, they can't do that.
They can.
When they do that, if they do that, they lose a lot of money if it happens, though. They're doing...
You might be the only person in the world that is backing a 5-3 to West Ham in this game.
I would say it's fairly likely that I am the only person in the world that's backed a 5-3 to West Ham in this game. Sorry, Noz, I interrupted you in the middle of something there. What were you saying?
I've kind of gone off, but I can't really remember now what I was saying. So back the game, I'll start from, I can't remember what I was going to say, but
you're
Leicester.
You're talking about Leicester and that they were...
Oh, I was talking about West Ham. Oh, that brings me back to what I was saying. I was talking about West Ham. And...
Yeah, I thought you were talking about Leicester and all of a sudden.
Yeah,
I was talking about West Ham.
Yeah, no, because I was just like, was I talking about Leicester?
No, you're on about how they're not a typical David Moyes team.
Yeah, not a typical David Moyes team. They do need to shore up a bit at the back, but they have goals in them. They're a very exciting team. They
shore up the back, Craig Dawson.
Again, but he did a good job.
That was the most insane signing that worked ever.
But think about it.
Craig Dawson, like.
But they were involved in a lot of thrilling games last season. They had the 3-3 last year against Arsenal. They the 3-2 to Newcastle last year, which they lost. The 4-2 this season to Newcastle. They scored a lot of goals, but they conceded a lot of goals.
5-3 is a lot of goals to score.
Leicester are... I think they could play a lot into Leicester's hand. Because if their team's going to win this, I see it being Leicester. Because Leicester are a fantastic counter-attacking team. Jamie Vardy excels when he has space to attack him behind.
Same goes for Iheanacho as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel the fact that because it's at home and we know the West Ham fan base, they're going to expect West Ham to be on the front foot and to attack Leicester. And that plays in Leicester's hands. Leicester are very happy to sit back and counter you. They're very solid at the back. And I feel like this, if there is a winner, I do see it being Leicester. But I do think that this team has such a great spirit in this West Ham team. Such a great togetherness and that bond they have. They're never out of any game. I can see them I see it being Leicester 2-1 in the last 10 minutes. I see a late equaliser for West Ham. Mikel Antonio showing up.
This is like he always does. Game that brought goals last season.
Exactly.
3-0 when they played away.
And then came back.
3-2.
Yeah, 3-2.
When they were playing in
the West Ham stadium. Were winning that game well and then nearly capitulated there at the end. That's what I'm saying. They do have... as if they switch off at the back. They feel the job is done. And I feel it'd be different this season, as I said. I think
having the fans behind them is going to be such a massive help.
I think it'll be a lot of pressure. I think it's
a lot of pressure, and it is West Ham fans, so it can be a very toxic atmosphere. But I don't see it being that way because they've seen their team performance so well recently. I think they're fucking insane to turn on them if they go one goal down to a team who finished ahead of them last season.
I think it all depends on the style of play.
See, I think this is also a game that West Ham fans can't be coming into thinking, yeah, we'll win this. It's a game where West Ham fans will be coming in hoping they'll win it, but thinking it's going to be a hard game, which is what makes me think they're going to really get behind the players and really, like, spur them on to score 5 goals and concede 3.
I agree with you. I do think the West Ham fans will be behind the boys today. I think they're after falling in love with this West Ham team. I think they're after...
It's terrible.
I think they've warmed to Moyes because they were not impressed with Moyes in his first spell. And they weren't inspired by
reappointment, yeah. They did not like the reappointment at all.
But I think they're after warming to him. I think he's deserved it. And I think...
He has deserved.
Yeah, he has. Moyes...
Fucking 6th place with West Ham. That is as insane as when he used to do that shit with Marouane Fellaini.
Don't you ever disrespect Lord Fellaini.
I won't disrespect Fellaini, but Fellaini should not be your main outlet.
Basically,
he played up front for them.
I know, it was so funny, man. I loved Marouane Fellaini. I fell in love with him as a player.
It's so good we signed him.
But I suppose this is... If we're after going on a bit of a tangent there. The last two, we're after going... Like the Arsenal one definitely padded his runtime.
This one we've been staying fairly on topic. We've been talking about the fans.
Exactly, and it's very relevant, but I suppose the best way to close this off is that while neither of us know exactly how this is going to go, we're predicting this is going to be an extremely exciting game. And
fucking watch it.
Yeah, this could be the whole game. This could be the game of Game Week 2. This genuinely will be, in my opinion. I think this is going to be the most exciting game by a mile.
Well, it depends. If you're looking for a back-and-forth game, you're looking at it being better than Leeds against Everton. If you're looking at it just out of lol, Chelsea and Arsenal, you know, Lukaku just bumming.
Mm.
That was a great game as well. So it's got the two of them. They're two fair, like, they're both good games that they has to live up to. But there is the chance, like, there is obviously the opening there for a high-scoring game to become the best game. And that's what we both predict happening.
Like, I strongly urge anyone, if you can, tune in. 8:00 tonight. It's going to be a cracker.
It is. And, right, so I think we're just about to finish up. Actually, just before we finish up, I've thought of another point, Noss.
Okay.
I think Leicester might be a bigger team than Arsenal. I don't know.
They may
Should we discuss?
Nah, we'll save that for its own separate episode.
Right, on that note, thank you all so much for watching.
Yeah, you're watching it, right?
I mixed them together because I said listen. I tried to say listening, but I said watching. So I said watching. I didn't even say watching. I said watching.
Oh, don't worry. Trust me, it's extremely hot in here. So I'm going to quit some Zach because I had a big fuck up there earlier.
So thanks so much for listening.
Maybe one day you'll get to watch us too.
Nah, fuck that, man. Hack me PlayStation or something. Right. Peace out.